We're back with Behind the Bench. I got to tell you, 2025, it's starting off pretty crazy. I have one of my favorite people coming on tonight, Karen McDonald from the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office, the Oakland County Prosecutor. We have other great stories coming in. Yes, $138 million verdict, one of the largest, if not the largest. We got to verify that in Oakland County. Jury came back unanimous for a hostile work environment case. And none other than myself and Zach Runyon, we were lead counsel in the case, and Alexis Otto, she was part of it in front of Cheryl Matthews. It was a great trial. We'll talk about that and much more with my partner in crime, Todd Perkins, who will join us as always. We'll be right back just after this. Tell you, Link, that's some good jazz music going on. I like the new promo. We have one of the foremost prosecutors in our state, someone that is amazing. She is, I don't know how she does it. I don't think she sleeps. But anyway, we have with us Karen McDonald from the Oakland County Prosecutor's Office. Prosecutor McDonald, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
I'm okay. Just another day in Oakland County, dealing with, you know, sometimes really, really sad and unfortunate events.
Yeah. The sandbox for which you live, I don't think people understand that, you know, the impact it can have on a person. Obviously, you know, you sit in that chair, and it's a heavy chair at times. And you've been through it, from the Oxford case to now. You had a headline story, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. I don't know how that seems like someone that doesn't have a conscience. Tell us what's going on. This is a mother that basically abandons three children who don't see the daytime. They don't go outside, but I heard maybe once or twice. It sounds crazy to me.
Right. The allegations that were put on the record in the swear to, which is what I'm confined to, is saying, are that she paid rent on this townhouse, and at some point did live with her children, but somewhere around 2019 or 2020 left the home and left three children there, and they didn't leave the house except for one child left twice to just walk outside, and then just had food delivered to them or delivered it herself, but had no physical contact with the kids. And so they were called to the scene, officers, to do a well check, because the landlord asked them to do that. The rent hadn't been paid since October. And they, once coming into the home, couldn't even imagine there were people there, because it was like nothing you've ever seen, and discovered three children.
What are their ages?
15, 13, and 12.
I mean, that, I don't know. That's just unconscionable.
So if you think about, you know, 4 years ago, they were much younger.
Right. Right.
And, you know, during the press conference today, somebody asked me, a reporter said, what do you think stood out to you? Which was really hard to answer, because it was also horrifying looking at the images and, you know, the body camera and the video. And I think the thing that really sticks with me as a mom is, you know, they were living in absolute squalor, you know, no ability to bathe, wash themselves. There was, you know, feces everywhere. But the thing that really stands out to me is, you know, living without a parent, somebody who loved them. And it's really hard.
I can't imagine the treatment for which they're going to need, the therapy. And just, you know, imagine they're on an island by themselves, with no love from an adult. I can't imagine the years of what they're going to have to go through to just find out, you know, normalcy, a new norm for them anyway. I can't imagine. How took so long? But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, that was actually when I first took office, I wrote and published an article, I think in the Free Press, talking about what we deem we term these ghost children. And they were kids who simply never returned back to school after COVID. There are also situations where children are withdrawn from districts and schools, and, you know, unless they are re-enrolled someplace else, there could very well be instances where the public, they have no interaction with the public. You know, you're allowed to homeschool. There aren't a lot of guidelines on that. They're not, you know, and in most cases, that's a good option for families, and I support it. But without the interactions with the public through school, there's no way of anyone knowing that these kids are being neglected or abused. And they'd never left the home. They had cell phones where they texted their mom. But that's it.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I do know that the public does need to understand that these things happen, and they also need to understand, and we need to be transparent, like the sheriff has been, and I was today, about what we're doing about it. So she was charged with first-degree child abuse, which is the most serious child abuse degree that you can charge them. It's a life offense, and that's because of the extreme neglect.
Wow. I have some other questions. Can you stick with us just for a minute? We'll be right back. Thank you so much, Prosecutor McDonald. We'll be right back with Behind the Bench. Link, I don't see the flood mug here. Anyway, we have with us Karen McDonald, the prosecutor of Oakland County, who just issued charges against the mother who abandoned her children, unconscionable act, for multiple years, charged with first-degree child abuse, a life offense. Karen, I imagine, you know, sitting in the spot you sit in, you see all the different crazy crimes that, you know, shock the conscience. Ones that, you know, you really can't put into words. I can't imagine, if you can, but maybe you can't, but the picture in everyone's mind's eye, how did you see it? I mean, you saw the videos, you saw the pictures. How deplorable was it?
You know, I stopped saying this is the worst I've ever seen, because something always comes around that's worse than that.
Right.
I can, you know, we see a lot of crimes and the effects on victims and evidence that is really jarring. But, you know, all I can say is that the responding officers were really shook up. And after I watched what they saw, I understood that. You know, we have kids who couldn't really walk because of their muscles allegedly were just atrophied. They were dirty. And it's just so hard to believe. But look, this is why I do what I do. And I think I've always focused on, okay, well, I'm trying to do something about this. And I don't lose faith or hope in humanity doing this job. I see victims and, you know, law enforcement and victim advocates and our assistant prosecutors and all these people who could be doing lots of other things, and they're doing this work. And, you know, the only thing that makes this at all tolerable, is that we are at least trying to do something about it. And also remember that our office, we don't just criminally prosecute people. We represent the Department of Health and Human Services in neglect proceedings. And so we are also, we've informed the court, going to pursue termination of parental rights. So we also, you know, there's a separate and very important proceeding that the family court presides over about where these kids are placed and what happens to them. And that is a priority for us.
no better seat than what you previously had, your experience, you know, being on the bench, being a judge, coming into the position you're in now. But you've handled those cases on the bench, and now you bring that experience and wisdom to the prosecutor's office. I would imagine, you know, that, you know, I'm long on people. I'm long in hope on law enforcement. Yeah, not all law enforcement's created equal. Not all lawyers, judges, mm-hmm. doctors are created equal. However, you have a great team out there. I work with them on a regular basis. But this is just one of those cases that, you know, it needs to be aired in the headlines around the country, because we need to have brothers and sisters out there. I appraise you, you know, for stepping up and taking the long-term approach and making it better. But
you know, I'm one of those people, and I would urge you, you know, my family and friends know this. If I'm out anywhere and I see a child in distress or not with a parent or something seems off to me, I take action and make sure that child is safe in an appropriate way. And I think that's what we all need to do. In this case, they didn't leave very often, but you know, there are lots of places you can go to refer or inquire or make sure children are safe. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to do that.
Our most precious commodity, our kids. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Well, I thank you. My hat's off to you as always. Keep up the great work, the great job. Thanks for telling everybody and keeping us informed and transparent as always. You know, I wish you the wind at your back. We'll talk with you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So we have on coming up here a colleague, Zach Runyon. I knew of Zach. I didn't know Zach, but I knew of Zach. And then we got an arranged marriage. We ended up trying a case together. He had one of the victims in a hostile work environment case, the one that just rang the bell and is hitting the national headlines, $138 million. Zach, you with me?
Yeah, I'm here, Todd. How you doing?
Good, my man. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good.
Well, I hope, you know, I had to crash after the trial and the verdict. You know, I'm one of those guys that wakes up at 2:30 to start working on this stuff every day. How did you, you know, did you get any downtime, or did you have to clear off your desk for taking a lot of time off to try this case?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the tough thing about trials, you know, is right afterwards, you're always so exhausted. I mean, I feel not only mentally exhausted, but also physically exhausted once I'm done with the trials. But once I'm back in the office, I realize I just spent, you know, 1 to 2 weeks not paying attention to my other files. So there's never much downtime, but I'm hoping in a couple of weeks I can, you know, get some rest.
Yeah, no, I hear you. It's a never-ending cycle, and the work you do and the passion you have for doing it, obviously the jury heard it. You know, I have a few takeaways. Tell me where, you know, what are your thoughts? I mean, the jury sent a message, but what were your biggest takeaways in this case?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway for me was that the jury really saw through the defendant's lies. You know, and I know that from speaking with my client and, you know, being able to speak with a few of your clients, I think they were worried about that going into the case, is that the jury was going to buy into these lies that the defendant was going to tell. And they obviously didn't. I mean, you don't give a $138 million verdict if you're buying anything the defendant is trying to tell you. So that was my biggest takeaway, is that the jury just flat out did not believe a single thing the defendant was saying throughout the case.
Yeah. I think obviously, you know, there's only two defenses, and one is that it didn't happen. The other is that it was consensual. The fact of the matter is his lies, you know, the jury, it didn't resonate with them. I think the one of the takeaways, and you and I shared this before, but It sends a message, and I just hearken back to the testimony of one of the young ladies and the courage that she said basically of why she did this. She was going to let this go. She didn't, you know, she feared this Gary. She feared the, you know, she found shelter basically because he had threats made against her or her family. But the fact of the matter is she said, I'm doing this for all the women that have to face the Garys in the world, you know, in essence. And I thought that was just so powerful because, you know, as well as I do, maybe not as blatant and maybe as blatant and maybe worse, but it happens all over the place around our country where doesn't necessarily need to be a female. It can be, you know, just a human being that is subjected to the power play of an employer or a boss. And to me, I just found the courage of these young ladies to be amazing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, even the, you know, fear that they had right before each of them testified was palpable. And I don't blame them. I mean, the way this guy had treated them through the years and the way he continued to attack them and, you know, even threaten their families, their courage was really inspiring. And I think it, and I think that's why this verdict was so important, because it really vindicated everything that our clients stood for. And it really showed them that, you know, standing up to sexual harassment like this is worth it. And, yeah, I mean, it was just really inspiring. I know that it was tough for each one of those girls. And, I hope each of them are feeling, are feeling like they made the right decision.
Yeah, all of my clients, all five of them said the same thing. We had a big group Zoom call last night. One of the jurors called me today, asked to stay anonymous, but said the same sentiment that the fact of the matter was is that they came to a verdict based on the visceral reaction of each young lady and how authentic, how real, that it wasn't fake. And when you think about it, these young women, 19, 20, 21, 22, the oldest 25, you know, and this happened 3 years ago, so imagine 22 at the time. They all had this visceral, palpable emotion that was so authentic and real. That's what the juror said, and she hoped and prayed that, you know, they can use this to go forward and, you know, make a better place. We have to take a quick break. I have a couple other questions. Can you stay with me for a minute?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, my man Zach Runyon. We'll be right back just after this. Well, this is what we do. Zach Runyon bringing down the house. You know, flood law. I got to tell you, Zach, we have a special guest with us. Our co-counsel, Alexa Otto. She, Alexa, you there with us?
Yes, I am.
We just throw you right into the fire, Zach. I love having a great team. You know, no I in team, and giving a victim, a witness for Alexa to do in court. Alexa, tell us the truth. Tell everybody. You got over 100,000 listeners. Tell us the truth. How nervous were you going up for the first time in front of a jury?
I was definitely nervous, but I think it was more exciting than anything, being able to advocate for women that were my age in such a case.
Yeah. Well, you knocked it out of the park. No objections by the counsel. And, I think, Zach, what do you think? I think it resonates with the jury. Obviously it did. The young lady that, Alexis did, I think the jury came back, if I'm correct on that, for the intentional infliction of emotional distress, somewhere close to $8 million for her. Is that right?
Yeah.
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 What'd you think, Zach?
I mean, Alexa did great. coming in with your first witness on a case like this, especially with a defendant like we had and the claims we had, is not easy. And she did a great job. And Alexa, I don't know if I believe you weren't nervous. I'm still nervous every time I do anything during a trial. It's yeah. always nerve-wracking.
It always is. When I don't get nervous or I don't have to go to the bathroom before a trial, it's time to hang up the shoes, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But
I think it was nerve-wracking, but to form a connection with the woman, I think, made it that much more exciting to help them through what I knew would be a difficult time for them.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the biggest impact to you on this case? And mind you, ladies and gentlemen, this is a Wayne State law grad, uber smart, but first time we just throw her into the fire, into this middle of the jury trial. What was the biggest impact for you on this, other than the connection and other advocating for, you know, your peer group? This is your generation.
I think that just setting a precedent moving forward, encouraging people to come forward, and that people are there to help you in a situation that might seem extremely nerve-wracking to come out about to those around you, and especially in front of a jury. I think setting that precedent moving forward for women is very important in the workplace. So I think
that's awesome.
That's the most important thing to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's, there's a lot of silence out there. I just signed up 2 new cases, and against major corporations, that are going to be, you know, one a state government and the other, one of our largest corporations in our country. And in both situations, there are allegations, that just recently happened, but, the fact of the matter is, in both cases, these women suffered sexual advances that they had to suppress because of an all-boy network and a majority of men that, you know, just that was the way, the commonplace. And, you know, hopefully, you know, this is one of those cases that can set up and tee up the you know, going forward, the courage. This too, I don't know what, Zach, you thought about this, but Alexa, but I thought this was a movie. I mean, this was one of those cases where you legitimately, because of the amount of women, this was a movie. And just throw a pin in this, I've gotten 3 more calls from women that he did this to before that are now coming forward. So I don't know. I hope, I'm cautiously optimistic. Zach, what do you think, that this rings the bell for more courage going forward?
You know, I hope so. I hope so. And to, you know, kind of piggyback on what you were saying is, you know, when I do a lot of these cases, I do a lot of sexual harassment, a lot of sexual assault cases. And it's like clockwork. The companies, the big corporations, they always, you know, perform some sort of victim blaming, you know, whether that be attacking the girl's personal history or saying she participated, or in some cases they'll even say, you know, she wanted it to happen. I mean, they come up with the craziest theories. And, you know, they did that in this case too. And I think that always makes it so much harder for these women to come forward and, you know, tell their story. So when you do get a big verdict like this, I think it will help other people to come forward because they know that, you know, the juries are going to listen. They're not going to blame them for what happened, and they're going to get it right. I mean, I think, you know, the more trials I do, the more I really start to believe the jury gets it right. And so I think this will help more people come forward.
Well, I tend to believe, I think you're accurate. I've had, I don't know, over 300 trials in my career, as a prosecutor, as a state prosecutor, as a Wayne County assistant prosecutor, as a defense attorney, as a plaintiff's attorney. And I can say, you know, I can count on one hand where I believe the jury got it wrong. 99% of the time they get it right for maybe different reasons that we even didn't see, but they get to the end of making a just verdict. The thing that I tell everybody out there, it seems to me, you know, when you talk about human resources, what do people need to know? What, you know, if you suffered a discriminatory or hostile work environment, a quid pro quo, a sexual act or retaliation or discrimination, it, you know, at big companies, the HR, the human resource department, is supposed to be an advocate for curing the wrong. But oftentimes, Zach, tell me what you think, and Alexa, chime in if you can, but it seems to me HR on a lot of levels is the company's HR, not the victim's HR. Do you see that in your practice? You do a lot of this work. Do you see that?
Yeah. Yeah. More times than not, what I find is when someone comes forward with an allegation of, you know, whether it be sexual harassment or even just, you know, sex discrimination or race discrimination, oftentimes it ends in the person being fired. And so a lot of the cases I handle have an element of retaliation to it, because more times than not, I'm seeing the company taking adverse action against the person who reports it. So I think you're exactly right. You see that these human resources divisions of companies are really there to try to protect the company, not the employees.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I find. I think at the major company level, you know, because HR wants to keep their job too, you know? And so who pays them? We could have a whole topic on Title IX and universities, but I've seen it in all my abuse cases. We'll be right back just after this. Zach, I want to thank you. I applaud you. It was great trying a case with you, and I look forward to doing many more in the future. Thanks for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Likewise, Todd. Thanks, Alexa.
Alexa, thank stay you. With us for a minute. We'll be right back with just after this with Behind the Bench. There is so much happening in the news right now and so many different topics. My brother in crime, Todd Perkins, not with us. He's out fighting the fights right now and called in and said he's got a conflict that he's helping somebody out with. You know, my heart goes out to all those people in Southwest Detroit right now. I'm just looking at that and the displacement that they're going through and the hell they're going through. My heart prayers go out to them. I can't imagine being in the shoes they're in. And be careful. Make sure you don't sign any waivers right out of the gate. Make sure that you're staying warm and getting the things necessary. I just can't imagine. But the pipe system, I'm sure they're going to figure it out. I'm sure they're going to get to a place where they understand why. You got to understand the infrastructure in Detroit, knowing a lot of the area of pipes and the water mains and the like. They do a great job with what they have, but there's a lot of work that continues to be done, and I'm sure it will be done under Mayor Duggan. Also, you know, having Karen McDonald on, I don't know what say you, but three kids left in a home by themselves for over 4 years, 3 years is just, it's unconscionable. And I can't imagine, but one of the things, the messages that we want out there is, you know, is there needs to be more accountability, but we have to have something, some prophylactic measure in place that this stuff just doesn't happen. I can't imagine, but anyway, you know what happens more often than not, and it should never happen. So I kept on with us my one of our great staff attorneys and associates at Flood Law, Alexa. Tell us, so you just had your first case. You just graduate. You're uber smart. You know, tell all the young lawyers out there young law students two things. What do you see on the horizon? And one, with technology, AI, and I, you know, you got to remember, I'm from public schools. Ninth grade, they taught me to make a chair. 10th grade, they taught me to sit down. AI, you know, I can barely turn on the computers at times. How big do you think that's going to become in the legal world?
Oh, I think it's going to become massive. And I think it should be integrated into the legal world. I think a lot I mean, specifically in law school, we were kind of shunned away from using AI in any sense. But I think it's important to integrate it and help law students and new attorneys learn how to use it in the correct way so that it can guide the practice of law and be used properly rather than in improper ways. So I think training needs to be done in AI because it is the future.
I know it is. I think it's gonna have a big impact of the haves and the have-nots, the jobs and the non-jobs. But I think young law students need to understand. But I also think it's really important. One thing that I've noticed, and you're a great writer, but one thing that I've noticed is the writing skills. I always profess if you can write well, you can speak well. Does AI get us away from that brain power? That using that brain power of, you know, for me, writing is a strain. People think sometimes I'm a good writer. For me to get out one document, sometimes I'm redrafting it 10 times. Do you think with AI that writing becomes a lost craft, a lost talent?
No, I think if you're using AI in the right way, it only helps you improve your writing skills and notice things that you may have not noticed previously. So I think it's important to draft things on your own and then use AI for suggestions on how to improve. But I think it's important in that sense.
Yeah. And then there is the whole other side of AI, the business side of AI. I have watched, I mean, for all the people listening out there, it's not by accident that there's billboards along I-94. There's not by accident that, you know, big firms know what radio stations you listen to on 94 or 75 or at major crash scenes. That stuff just is, and it's going to get more and more technical, and the metrics, you know, are going to be big. So I think on the business side of things, it can be really helpful. I think it can also be helpful in the accounting side of things as well. With clients. And then it's the human element. How big is AI, you think, going to be with regards to intake of clients? You know, when a client calls us up today and says, you know, my son was hit or my daughter was assaulted or whatever the case may be, you know, talking to a human versus talking to an AI bot. I don't know. Do you see that on the horizon?
No, I don't think AI will ever replace human interactions and human connections, especially when you initially make contact with clients. I think it will and should remain more on the back end of things in the legal field. I don't think it should ever be the front-facing, I guess, technology associated with client intake or speaking with clients in general of any sort.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is exactly why we hired Alexis. So tell me this. Demonstrative evidence, AI and demonstrative evidence in the courtroom, having the ability to recreate scenes, recreate a homicide, recreate a car accident, recreate a conversation. I got it. That technology is just, I mean, it's at its infancy in some regards, but I can see that really assisting me, you, all trial lawyers in a courtroom.
Oh, absolutely. I think the way that you can, you know, tweak things through AI and make it to what you deem to be perfection or what may have happened at the scene could be incredibly impactful, especially if you're able to then present that in front of the jury.
Yeah, absolutely. So I promised Dwayne Williams that I would bring him up tonight. Dwayne is, and you are working, you know, tirelessly on this case, and we already filed one part of the lawsuit, that for the WICA money by the state. But Dwayne, for everybody, Dwayne spent 12 and a half years in prison for a crime that was not committed. Two people died accidentally in a fire. It was an accidental fire caused by one of the deceased smoking on a couch with a Zippo lighter. And the manipulation of the evidence at time of trial, at the time of the preliminary exam. Forget the trial. At the time of the probable cause, there was no Zippo lighter. There was no accidental fire. There was all the documents were manipulated before a preliminary exam. Tell us, you know, how big of a case that is to you, and you sinking your teeth into it. What you see, and how big of an impact that an innocent man put in prison. You think you see that on TV, but it happens more times than not.
Absolutely. This is a huge case that, working with Dwayne, he's a wonderful human, and it's been impactful just solely being able to talk to him and learn from him and his experiences. But on the other side of things, the injustice that was done in trying to reverse that, there's no way to reverse someone that spent 12 years in prison. But I think attempting to help undo the wrongness in the situation is incredibly impactful. And I'm excited to be a part of such a situation.
Me too. I can't tell you how blessed we are to have you working on it. So this is what you can tell all the young lawyers out there. Not many of them ever get a chance to work on a case like that, but you do have Flood Law. So I'm excited. Excited that you're part of it. And that's the elite group, that we have. And we just hired a new lawyer. And I'm excited for Katie coming on. We'll have her on next time with Behind the Bench, maybe the two of you, to talk about your experiences. One thing I want to kind of wrap up. We're coming to a close. Tell us, the impact this jury trial, we can all imagine, but does it create the excitement going forward to try to make justice for everybody that you come in contact with that has been wronged?
Absolutely. Starting off on this foot has been amazing and makes me so excited to continue in this field and help those in my community and Metro Detroit, and I'm also incredibly thankful to be a part of the Flood Law team.
Oh, you're the best. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great night tonight. I promise Todd will be back with us, Perkins, that is, next time. But we look forward to having you listen in to Behind the Bench. And my new friend, Jeff Daniels, 70 years of age. I hope he's listening tonight, his birthday. Happy birthday, Jeff. All right. We'll be back next time with Behind the Bench.